Well, it's a critical time here in Montana for our farmers and our producers. The issues that they are dealing with, I'm not sure we're all fully well aware of those. But we see those, the effect of those issues, when we go to the store and shop for these products. So we are here for the Farmers Tour. A couple of things on our plate here, you guys. The pulse industry is an important part of this story in Montana. Nation's leading pulse producer is our Big Sky Country. Eastern Montana is also looking at some longer-term consequences of changes in infrastructure, and that goes to the Sydney Sugar Plant, right? So there's a lot of area producers that are looking at how do we replace the sugar beet crop, and we'll be talking about that today. Those opportunities ultimately depend on markets. So Weston Merrill is with us here to talk about trade. And then finally, the local elevator, right, provides probably the most immediate snapshot of our 2026 crop. So that is on the docket today for the Farmers Tour on Voices of Montana. Welcome, you guys. Thank you again for joining us and being a part of the For the Farmers Tour. It's so vital. This is our fourth annual tour. We're in Culbertson, Montana. At this, really, I'm excited to talk about this. The C&B operations building here is just brand new, and as Mike Choates had said, this is something they needed 20 years ago, but 20 years have changed an awful lot in the ag industry, and so now is the right time for it, too. So we'll talk about that here. A bit later on, like I mentioned, Weston Merrill is going to be here. Also, Dr. Chensi Chen, superintendent of the Eastern Agricultural Research Center, will talk about some of the fun things they're doing there. One of our main presenting sponsors is the Northern Pulse Growers, and producer and board president is McCade Malin with us here. McCade, how are you, sir?
Hey, fantastic. Thank you for having us today.
Great. Thanks for being here. And Tom Allen. Tom, good morning, sir. You're a field representative for the Pulse Growers.
Yep. Really happy to be here in Culbertson.
Yeah, right? Yep. Yeah. What do you think about this this new facility?
You know, the facility has been great for our growers locally. I mean, providing their needs immediately compared to what we had before, it's getting things in and out faster. So that's all what it's about. More parts, keep us in the field.
But isn't it kind of cool to come in here and dream and think about...
Someday I might have a 100 by 300, but yeah, they got me beat here for sure.
So, Tom, let's get right into the pulse industry here, right? Montana has seen an awful lot of growth in it. What are we doing with it?
Well, one of our problems right now is the price. I mean, they're not worth much. 70% of our product is exported, and that includes Canada. So we don't know what's going to happen there right now with the recent events with trade with Canada. So we're trying to increase our domestic market. And that's tough, because if you're like me, you didn't grow up eating pulses. You know, I'm almost 70 years old, and I probably didn't have my first lentil until I was 45.
Yeah.
So we got to change the eating habits of the public, which is tough to do.
Well, and that's one thing I want to talk about. But pardon me, I even wrote it down, but Andy Schwab, broadcaster, award-winning broadcaster, Northern Ag Network, and Colter Brown, who's the director of the Northern Ag Network, is also with us here as well. How about giving those guys a hand, right? You guys listen to these guys every day on the radio. So just hop in here anytime, Andy. But I'm going to go to McCade here and talk about it as a producer on the ground. You know, what made you get into pulses? And then what was that process like? What are some of the things you had to learn and still have to learn?
I mean, we initially jumped into it back in 2018, kind of when I got back from college and slowly started encouraging my folks to jump on this new train, something different, a little bit better agronomic value for our ground. And as we've grown into it, now we use stripper headers, we're no-till, keeping as much organic material on our ground as possible. And this spring, we had a terrible drought. You know, we seeded. We didn't have much for ground moisture, and then we had a windstorm on May 14th, if I remember. It was the Dust Bowl, dirty 30s all over again, blew out all of our flax. A lot of canola acres had to be reseeded up here. I mean,
there's some cool video, but that was about the only thing.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
I don't know. Right? Let's just keep that in the 30s.
Okay? Okay, yeah.
But the thing is think about if we continue those farming practices, what this country would have looked like this year. We probably wouldn't have some of the good crops that are coming off the field if the farmers in the area haven't made that change.
Yeah, and you know, as we come up here from Sydney this morning, there's a lot of green grass on the hillsides as well. Talk about the latter half of the season. I know you said you had to replant quite a bit of acreage, but Talk about the end of the latter half of the season for you guys.
Right. I mean, when we start off from January 1st to June 11th was our first major rain event. From June 11th to about July 4th, July 5th, right there, we had a total of 8.5 inches on our place of moisture. Then we really slowed up all through July, got really hot. But then now we've had a couple spotty showers to keep the grass coming back. But everything just sat and wait all spring long. It just sat there and sat there and sat there until June came along, and then this country just exploded.
and that looked good, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Thomas, you said increasing your domestic market, right? What are the challenges there? Where can we go? How many pulses can we grow and sell and export here in the state?
Well, we can grow a lot, as we proved. It's getting rid of them, and with the foreign markets are not reliable, so increasing the domestic market is a challenge. We've been working through USA Pulses, our national group. I actually went to Washington, D.C. in February with them, talked to our congressional delegation, another Senator Bozeman from Arkansas, head of the Senate Agricultural Committee. And actually, there was a program in the 2014 Farm Bill that provides a pilot program to get pulses into our school lunch program and into the military food service. So if you can imagine getting every school district in the country eating lentils or chickpeas once a week, what that would do for our domestic market. Well, it was passed in the 2014 Farm Bill, but it's never been funded. It's never gotten appropriation. So we were there telling them, this is the time. We need an appropriation on this. We need this to get going. And, of course, nothing's been done yet.
And to jump in here, I mean, market prices are very much important to us. But as far as the Growers Association as well, mm-hmm. we need to work on those input costs. I mean, we don't need to have $24 lentils per bushel, okay? If we have $2 diesel, you know, $10 Roundup, $400 fertilizer, we can make a lot of things happen without needing all that money on the back end. So inputs are everything to us, too. That's why, and you guys hopefully are going to talk about it later today, we're working on a brand-new fertilizer facility in between Culver's and Bainville here.
And actually, we invited them on, but they couldn't get away from what they're doing to be here. But they're going to be on the program a bit later on because that is a huge investment
right.
In this area, too. Just like C&B Operations here, this large building is a huge investment in ag
right.
In Montana. And Colter Brown, you probably want to follow up on that because it tells something.
Yeah, I mean, following up with what you said, McCade, on the prices. Obviously, prices are not where we want them to be, but I think pulses fit into these operations pretty importantly from an agronomic standpoint. You talk about managing input costs. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways guys have tried to manage some of that fertilizer bill is turn into pulses. Talk about the agronomic advantages they present to rotations.
Yeah, I mean, every 4 years, we kind of get to take a break from slamming down a pile of urea into the ground. But at the same time, we in our operation, we don't back off the starter. That stays there. It doesn't move very fast, so it's kind of a catch-up year. Getting ready for the next durum and flax crop on our operation coming up, that's huge. Pile that in. So pulses, they also put nitrogen back into the ground. I mean, this year, Bailey hasn't been out. He's here somewhere, but he hasn't been out yet to start doing our soil tests. I'm excited to see what our South Farm did. I mean, the organic material that was in those lentils was phenomenal. Now, they didn't run phenomenally, but, I mean, when you have two-foot lentils, you get pretty excited about it.
Tom, I think about, as you were talking about the domestic markets as well, I think about the sheep industry. They've really found a niche in the ethnic market. You know, a lot of those folks coming over from overseas have really just drawn into the lamb market. Is that same markets for you guys? Is that the same target audience? Can you collaborate with the American sheep industry and kind of find that market?
We'll collaborate with anybody. anything that will help us, that not really targeting mm-hmm. that. I mean, right now it's more nationwide. Try to get, like I said, into the schools, into the military. Something that's pretty, good.
Got to get a farm bill passed first.
Got to get a farm bill passed, but I don't know when that's going to happen.
I mean, kind of in that, we already do collaborate on the grower level. Yeah. I mean, we have cattle on our place. We raise durum. We raise an oilseed. We raise a pulse. I mean, we're all intertwined already, so we're playing with those markets. Yeah, what the president said the other day about bringing beef in didn't set well with a lot of ranchers up here. We'll get over that eventually. But, yeah, it's we're working together. That's the big thing. That's what the Pulse Growers Association, keeping it as a group.
McCade Malin is with us, producer and the board president of Northern Pulse Growers, and then also Tom Allen, Montana field representative for the Northern Pulse Growers. I'm excited to hear that at least they had a mechanism for an appropriation for that school program, because I think that's going to be quite vital. So you got one step, it's not a ladder yet.
If you happen to run into any of your congressional representatives, just give them a little nudge. Just kind of mention it that sure would like to see that happen.
What's it like raising a product in a world that's pretty inconsistent? You know, like you said, the president could say something one day, say something the next, and that affects the markets. And here you've got crop in the ground already. Yeah.
We got a trick for that.
Yeah.
It's called steel grain bins. Fill them. And when the market goes up, empty them. That's how that works.
Oh, that's way too simple then.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to preview our next segment a little bit, where we're going to have Dr. Cheng Si Chen from the Eastern Ag Research Center. But, I mean, research is a big part for the Northern Pulse Growers, trying to get better varieties that will do better. McCade, talk about how important that is to you. How do Northern Pulse Growers try to advocate on behalf of getting better varieties?
I mean, on average, that's like 80%+ of our annual budget. I mean, research. That's the thing that if we ever pause that, you know, we're pausing 10, 15 years in advance. And what we're spending today on those checkoff dollars into research, we will never get to see that. But the next two generations, they will get to take effect. So the generation that paid for the stripper headers and the disc drills and that technology and the pulse market that we're in today, we're seeing the advantageous effects of that.
And that's one of the things I think we love about our rural community, is that we're not just thinking about ourselves. We're thinking about the next generation, right?
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
And it's also not just research for your farmers. It's also for the consumer. We're investing in how that flour is marketed, or getting varieties that make a better flour, so make a better noodle, or makes a better little cheese puff type deal. A lot of work into that type of research. We spent a lot of money with out in Fargo, North Dakota, with the NCI, yeah,
yep.
National Crop Institute, to further the marketing of these.
You guys all kind of looked at us a little weird there. Do you know that you can turn our pulses into flour?
Yeah. Well, and that's one question I have, because I do a lot of Made in Montana trade shows,
yeah.
And there are people who have turned lentils into, like you said, flour, brownies, cake. Does that future hold promising for Montana, that value-added stuff?
It's an additional market. And it's not a bad thing to introduce to our schools. It's a healthy crop to consume.
What are lentils? I mean, we haven't even really talked about it, but what are they? When do people eat lentils on the table?
Well, I'll let Tom jump into that. He's kind of our cookbook master over here.
Yeah. If you need a recipe, just let me know. I got lots of recipes for you. They're in salads. They're in soups. They're flour, even little lentil crunchers. Yep. You know, roast them up, put some flavoring on them. There's all kinds of ways you can eat lentils and chickpeas. And, of course, we grew up, the only peas we ever ate was a Campbell's.
Right? Pea soup.
Pea soup. But there's lots of other things going along. Like you said, we have cookbooks full of recipes for you.
Well, and talk about what Pierce is doing with fractionating yellow peas, yep. And taking that protein and introducing that into baby formula that they can use in NICU. I mean, yep. Our products are going to benefit a wide range of consumers all across our nation, all across the world.
That's encouraging news. Yeah. I mean, and the fact that it seems like there's a lot more to gain and a lot more to learn about it as well.
A lot of these products you see on the shelves that say protein enhanced, or like the Cheerios protein, they're using pea flour to increase the protein in those.
Right.
Is that something we can do every day in our homes too? When does that happen?
My wife does. She loves going over to the grain bin and stealing a 5-gallon bucket at a time. She pulls out the cookbook, and it's just like, hey, babe, that was pretty good.
That's nice. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you for being a producer. Thank you for, you know, lobbying for the industry and supporting the industry and educating people around, Tom. Appreciate that.
Right.
That is Tom. Go ahead.
Jumping in here before we get off here with you guys, I want to thank all the sponsors that showed up to make this event important. I mean, this has been a trying year for a lot of farmers all across our nation, especially in northeastern Montana. We're going into spring. It was a huge letdown, and coming out of it, now harvest isn't quite what we expected. So, you know, farmers, don't be afraid to reach out. Talk to people. We all had a rough year, but, you know, it's if you have concerns, if you have thoughts, reach out. Talk to people. That's what we're here for the farmers.
Nice. McCade Malin, that's nicely put. Thank you very much. Tom Allen as well, Northern Pulse Growers. Thank you, guys. Live from C&B Operations in Culberson, Montana, here we are for the Farmers. It's our fourth annual For the Farmers tour. A bit later on, we're going to be at the Stagecoach. We've got a social, which has been pretty fun. That starts at 5 o'clock, so that's open to the public. A lot of folks here, too, at C&B Operations as we get kicking off here. A bit later on, we'll be visiting a lot of area farms, and just it's more than just a thank them. We learn from them as well. So that's all part of the For the Farmers tour, as well as kicking off the tour with the Voices of Montana and the very informative Voices of Montana. Andy Schwab and Colter Brown from the Northern Ag Network is here. Greg Simon from KATQ, I got to get him on the air here too. I threatened that was going to happen. So he's one of our affiliates and a great ag supporter as well. So good to have him here. We're going to move over though to Dr. Chintzy Chen, who's superintendent of the Eastern Agricultural Research Center at Montana State University, 10 Montana counties as well as the bordering North Dakota region. And there's a lot of work going on. How are you, doctor?
Good.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah.
So, I can get this started with, like, one question. As we chatted on the phone, the things that you are working on, can I grow it here? Can I harvest here? And then can I sell it? Talk about what you guys are doing there at the center, and then I want to get right into the replacing the sugar beet crop in this area, because that has to be sort of interesting but difficult, too.
Okay. Yeah, Eastern Agricultural Research Center has two farms. So Irrigated Farm is down in the valley, and then I have another farm, it's a dryland farm on a bench. It's 7 miles from the main station. So that allow us to do the dryland and irrigate agricultural research to serve the irrigated farmers and the dryland farmers.
Yep.
So major research focus is develop varieties, so including winter wheat, spring wheat, durum, barley, pea, lentil, chickpea, and then also testing the oilseed. So those varieties, because the breeders breed the variety from other regions, it's not necessary can grow in Eastern Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Eastern Montana, we got irrigated farmers and dryland farmers and cover a big area from Circle to Sandywood. So that require testing the breeding materials in this different environment to have make sure they adapt to our environment, produce high yield, and have a good quality. So meet the end users, the market.
What have you found? What have you found when you started looking at replacing a crop that had been the dominant crop here for decades?
So the breeders are really doing really good job. If you look at from history, the yield is gradually and increase every year. So even the environment affect yield up and down. So if you look at the post crop, right? 20 years ago, whole Montana had only 40,000 acres of post crop pea, lentil, chickpea. Now we have 1.5 million acres of production in Montana, and 70% of the post crop is in Eastern Montana.
Yeah.
So it's a great progress. And then even the traditional crop, like wheat and barley, and you can see 50% of the spring wheat and 70% of the durum wheat grow in this eastern and northeastern region. So the breeders have to keep up the developing new varieties,
yeah,
of the good quality to meet our end users' market.
Andy, if you want to weigh in here too, but I'm curious about one thing, and we'll get into some variety of things here too, but as we look around here at C&B Operations and we're seeing smart technology being applied in producing, where has the research gone in the last 20 years? Is it exponentially higher and better? What do you think is possible in terms of yields and what you can do with researching that?
So genetic improvement, and then also production, reduce the production cost, right? So one development is the precision agriculture. So let equipment improve with the GPS guide and variable irrigation with a good soil moisture monitor sensors, allow farmer precisely put down where the input need fertilizer, herbicide, control weed instead of the block, broadcast with the high input. You can reduce, just apply the herbicide where you need, and then also apply variable rate of the fertilizer to your field. So that will reduce your cost and improve the use efficiency of the fertilizer.
Dr. Chan, we heard from McCade Malin earlier talking about the weather this year. Of course, it started off in almost a dust bowl, and then it turned into a monsoon in June. And just talk about some of the challenges that some of these producers face. Talk about maybe crop diseases or grasshoppers an issue again for you guys up here in this corner of the state.
Yes. So the drought, early drought this spring is an issue. Actually, a lot of farmers put the seed in the soil and didn't get moisture, couldn't get germinated,
right,
and have a variable emergence. So that if you don't have an emergence, uniform emergence, then that weed issue. And disease, of course, is an issue, particularly for the irrigate production. So Eastern Ag Research Center, we have another program led by Dr. Frankie Crutcher. She's a plant pathologist, so she's working on different kind of plant disease, including forage, the above ground, and also working on the root disease below the ground.
Nice.
So, particularly for post crop, pea and lentil, that root disease is an issue. So we, out of the long production history, that they actually develop root disease. And then for forest disease, actually that chickpea is very affected by the forest disease.
Gotcha. Well, we've got less than a minute left, Dr. Chan, but I'm curious, when you have a grower field day here, you meet with your advisory board, what are you most excited to share with them about the research that's happening at EARC?
So, yes, we always follow up with what the industry development and what the growers need. So, we develop new varieties and develop the management strategy. So most exciting is that we try to use a legume to reduce the nitrogen input, and that can reduce the production cost. So,
I love that you're here, because every time I'm talking to a producer, they're starting to sound more and more like a scientist. That means the work you're doing is very effective. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us here. I hope you're having a great Tuesday and making us part of your day all across the state of Montana. We have a friend from one of our affiliates, KATQ. Greg Simon is with us here, and I hope he's hanging out all day, because there he is. It'll be fun to chat with him throughout the day as well. For the Farmers Tour, Culbertson, Montana, C&B Operations, they have a new building here. We're going to talk a little bit about trade with Jason Bouchard and also Weston Merrill, but Coulter Brown has Mike Chose here, who's been a manager and a sales manager at C&B for a lot of years, and congratulations, by the way, Mike, on this new building.
Yeah, if you get the chance to drive down the High Line and see this building, it's the envy of every farmer and probably every equipment dealership across the region, too. Mike, talk about the investment that was made here in the Culbertson community with this building.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, everybody, for turning out for today. We appreciate it. We're glad we can be a part of the Farmers Tour here and share this. I've been here just about 30 years, and we needed a better facility. We were scattered around all over town. Probably total investment is just a tick over $10 million we've got into the building, the land, the everything here. It is a state-of-the-art facility. We've got lots of parts storage lots of room for growth in the shop here with extra technicians, and hopefully be here for the long haul to take care of the customers as their needs arise.
Well, and they certainly have a lot of them, and this allows you to serve more growers, serve them in a better way. I mean, I'm sure the growers appreciate you having this.
Well, as everything, our family farms and ranches too, and nobody likes to be broke down, and so the more help we have here to get the farmers up and going when they're broke down, especially during time-sensitive seasons like planting and harvest, the better off they are, the more efficient they are. We're glad we can be here, be a part of the Culbertson community, actually the greater community, because we're not only around Culbertson, but north to north and east and west, and we cover quite an area and have a lot of diversification here.
How big is C&B operations?
C&B operations today is 36 stores across six states. We've got stores in Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota.
Thank you so much for hosting us, Mike. This is a beautiful facility and a great way to start off our For the Farmers tour. So thanks a bunch. But we got to talk a little about trade here as well, Tom.
Has the community asked you to have a square dance in here yet? Because this is a good place for that.
Yeah, no, the only thing they on our open house we had last year, we had one guy who thought it was a state Class C basketball tournament going on here.
Congratulations. Mike Chose again from C&B Operations. All right, Weston Merrill's with us. Weston, give me it right there. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good.
Thanks Montana Department of Agriculture International Trade Representative and Jason Bashore, Manager, United Grain Elevator. How about you?
Howdy, good morning.
How's the crop looking?
It's taking a long time to answer that question. We'll start with the simple stuff.
Okay, that's good. Well, we'll go to trade here, right? Because we were talking about it. We heard our producers up here. Consistency with that. As the International Trade Representative, you recently went on a whole Ola Montana tour. We'll talk about that. But what about the tariffs? And what about the kind of the inconsistency in our trade policy? What is that doing to us?
That always makes it a more complicated environment to operate in. But what's exciting, you mentioned Ola Montana. I'll kind of speak to that for a second because, to be honest, we can't control, especially at a farmer level or like even state government level, we have no control over what happens in that arena. And so we've got to be the best efficient producers we can as producers, farmers, and ranchers. But from my perspective, one of the best things to combat that is relationships. And that Ola Montana program is a branded marketing program for specifically right now pulses in Latin America, and it's used as a relationship-building tool. And that's probably one of the strongest ways to buffer those types of inconsistencies and challenges in the market.
How long do you have to build that relationship?
Definitely a long-term relationship. So thankfully, the farmers and ranchers in Montana make my job really easy. Number one, they produce the highest quality products that you can find in the world economy,
yeah.
Right? So that makes my job really easy. Number two, the Ola Montana project is in part funded by the Montana Pulse Crop Committee, so those Montana Pulse Crop checkoff dollars, and I'm really thankful for the confidence they have in the Ola Montana project and their ability to market Montana-branded commodities in the world marketplace. And that kind of confidence allows us to step out into the world with the resources we need to build long-term relationships.
And that winds up in your elevators, Jason.
Indeed.
Yeah, talk about how much trade policy affects you. Jason, by the way, manager of United Grain Elevator, what does that do to the elevator, your industry?
Well, I mean, it creates an interesting situation because right now, like, we'll talk about wheat first, and then we can maybe move on to pulses. Like right now, for example, even though we produce a very high-quality crop here in Montana, which gives us a huge advantage because we can sell exclusively to quality-sensitive buyers, which is primarily in Southeast Asia and Eastern yeah. Asia, which United Grain, that's pretty much where we ship almost all of our wheat to. You know, it gives us a competitive edge to be able to go into those markets where, you know, we don't have, you know, what we call price buyers, the people just out there trying to buy the cheapest bushel of wheat possible. Like Egypt would be a perfect example of that. Mm. So we're right now competing with the Canadian bushel, which is still significantly cheaper than ours. So the Canadian farmer, you know, they can produce the bushel cheaper than us, which is a whole separate conversation that we don't have time for. And their quality you can compare their quality to ours. So right now we're in a situation where, you know, these quality buyers, we're going to have to chew through a large Canadian crop to really have a chance at the business. But once again, going back to the relationships, luckily, you know, especially my company, United Grain, we have a very well-established and long-running relationship with a lot of these flour mills in Southeast Asia. So at least I'm able to for the time being, move the wheat out of the state and out of the country and get it to market at with a reasonable time frame attached to it, despite the challenges we have with the railroads, which, once again, is a totally separate topic.
We're going to be have an extended show with Jason here a bit later on. Maybe you comment on that, about you know, the challenges that United Grain has with this.
Yeah, so all of those logistical challenges, whether it be a railroad, whether it be policy, like I said, what's one thing I know I can talk to is the relationship side of it. So while those buyers, just like you and I, there's a product we really like, maybe it's a little lower price over here, but comparable quality, we're going to go that way for a little bit. But because of a relationship, they're never going to go away. And then also, gaining that relationship back is always way harder. So these times where we have these kind of challenges is the time when it's most important to have that strong relationship. So we try to do that, and there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, I get calls a lot of times with these kind of challenges, whether it's rail, whether it's ocean freight, those things. It's just crazy how hard a farmer can work to produce the best he can, get the right rain at the right time, and that's just the very first step of the process.
And there's pain in his face when he says that as well, so I can appreciate that. What is the Ola Montana program?
So, like I said, it's a branded marketing campaign for Montana products, and it's mainly pulses because the funding comes from Montana Pulse Crop Committee and the USDA Specialty Crop Block Grant. We created that. It was created in the middle of COVID times when we couldn't do our normal in-person trade activities. We found that it evolved to be an in-person trade tool for building relationships, and it's been invaluable in bringing in buyers to Montana and then taking our exporting companies.
You know, we talked about that too, Weston, on the phone when you guys had those that inbound trade mission here not too long ago. What were some of the big takeaways that you guys found from some of those buyers of, I think it was almost a dozen countries that you had from Central America?
Yeah, number one, like I said, farmers and ranchers here make my job easy. Like when we get on farm and they show what they're doing, the high quality and everything that goes into producing a crop, that was, you know, those people sat down and went, oh, this is, you know, this is mom, dad, son, grandson, they're all in this together. That goes a long way. But they were really excited at the volume that we could produce. I think a lot of times, speaking specifically to pulses, we get lost in the like, oh, Canada, right? And so for them to come see that, oh, they can get a, you know, and I know prices right now maybe aren't what the farmer wants, but that's what a buyer wants. And so obviously at this point in time, they're really excited because the prices are more swayed to their favor. However, getting them kind of hooked on that quality is important now. It leads to sales later.
Yeah, and I'd like to add a punctuation mark on to emphasize the importance of a program like this. Like, for example, I still have farmers that are trying to sell me last year's lentil crop. And, you know, and this year's lentil crop is also looking pretty good. So now these farmers are kind of in an unprecedented situation where they're going to have 2 years' worth of lentils on the farm with really nowhere to take it. Like, you know, because I can't take lentils at my facility right now just because I have to keep my yellow pea program, my winter wheat, my spring wheat, all that stuff going. So, you know, these farmers kind of, it just emphasizes the need for these programs to actually ship the bushel out of the state and out of the country in a timely fashion. And we need more grain companies participating in these programs.
Jason, we talked a lot about trade here already, but tell about what you're doing in Canada. Obviously, that's been in the news a lot with the whole USMCA debate, but you're actually still shipping grain or pulses across the border.
Well, it would be more accurate to say that I'm doing business with a Canadian trader. It just really shows that it pays to be nice to people and to have friends and keep your friends. So, yes. Yeah. There's a shout-out to Don up there in Regina who's buying some yellow peas from me, and I'm going to be selling him some green peas, and hopefully, much to my boss's chagrin here later this winter, some lentils. So I'm doing what I can to nurture that friendship, just to make sure that even though it's not a lot of business, it's something. So that way, you know, when these trade barriers are eventually softened, we've got a good jumping-off point, and we've got a good relationship that's well-established.
You bet. Well, we talked earlier in the show about how's this harvest looking, and I know you said that's a big question, and I don't feel like we've ever said, boy, we have a nice uniform crop across Montana. That's just never been the case, but talk about what you're seeing with the crop that's coming in here and maybe some of the challenges, yeah. I guess. There's probably not a better word.
That's a great question. It's really a very good example, you know, a tale of two stories, this harvest, because, you know, the yellow peas came out of the field first, and the quality is just outstanding. You know, we're looking at 62, 63, 64-pound test weight peas. You know, the moisture is right where it should be. The quality is right where it should be. And, you know, the wheat on the other side of that has been kind of a question mark. We're seeing lower test weights. It was very dry during planting season, and in the month of June, we got between 4 and 6 inches of rain, within a 30 to 40-day period. So the quality is a little all over the place. I would still call the quality good, but like I said, we're seeing lighter test weights. I mean, I've had guys bring in spring wheat into the elevator to run through my instruments, you know, 50 pounds, 52 pounds, which is extremely light. You know, we call heavy spring wheat 58 pounds or above. And the Durham is even more dire. The Durham test weight has been, you know, 50 and below. I've seen some of it coming in. So, unfortunately, these guys are sitting on a Durham crop that is simply not fit for milling. So, it's creating a real challenge for these guys, especially these guys that are committed to Durham. Because, to my knowledge, most guys around here, they rotate Durham on a 2 to 3 year rotation. So, now they're sitting on a Durham crop that's not fit for milling. So, now we're going to have to get creative to find a way to get it out of here.
And what does that mean for the price they receive then? Because they've all enjoyed seeing the wheat market go up this summer, but that can mean some dockage when they bring it to you, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, to stay on the topic of Durham, I mean, we're seeing a situation now where for number one milling Durham, it's the same price as ordinary Durham was last year, which is pretty dramatic. I mean, no one wants to get, you know, $4 or less for a bushel of Durham. And the price of wheat is kind of holding in there, you know. I very tongue-in-cheek, you know, some might call me cynical. I tell my farmers, you know, they ask me all the time when the price of wheat is going to go up, and to which I respond, you know, looking at market fundamentals, there's no reason for it to be as high as it is. Mm. You know, like I said, they might perceive that as being cynical, but I do my best to give them the most measured and informed answer I can, you know, because I sit down all day looking at markets. And right now, you know, the vessel traffic just doesn't justify the price, so I'm trying to, you know, brace them for impact to see the futures market have some softness in it. But, you know, on the other side of that, we also see big carries in the market. Like, for example, from the September futures, which is what we're pricing all of our wheat off right now, going into, like, the March futures, it's like a 45-cent difference. So your wheat is worth 45 more cents to sell it in the wintertime than it is now. So the market is indicating to the farmer that they need to keep that bushel on the farm and market it this winter. And that's what we're seeing guys do.
I have learned just so much in this 40 minutes. Thank you for coming down, Jason and Weston. Jason Bashour, again, manager, United Grain Elevator, and Weston Merrill, International Trade Representative, Montana Department of Agriculture. Thank you guys for what you do as well. Good stuff. Don't forget about the social at the Stagecoach a bit later on here in Culberson, Montana. My thanks to McCade Malin, Tom Allen, Dr. Chin-Si Chen, as well as Weston Merrill and Jason Bashour for being a part of the For the Farmers Tour. We got just about 30 seconds. Greg Simon from KATQ has pulled into the building here. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing well. Yourself, Tom?
Doing good. Thanks. How's KATQ? How's Plentywood? How's local,
you know,
radio?
It's going. It's always a tough thing up in the agricultural country, because there's a lot of different things going at all times. We're just rounding into the sports season. All the farmers are kind of anxious for harvest to tie up so they can get into their grids and
right.
and Bobcat
and Wildcat
and all the high school. I think the high school sports are really some of the biggest breaks coming up here that people are really looking forward to.
You're going to be able to hang out today?
I'm going to try.
Nice.
I'm going to try. So I like the whole crowd you brought together. It's actually a nice representation of Northeast Montana for agriculture.
I want to thank you guys for showing up here. Good job today. Appreciate that. Greg Simon once again from KATQ, one of our favorites. You're one of our favorites, dude.
Likewise.
Thank you. And thank you guys all. We're live from the Sherman Inn tomorrow morning in Wolf Point. We will see you there on Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.